You're listening to Good Morning Marlow on Marlow FM 97.5.
I am joined this morning by, a good friend of mine nowadays, frankly, Chris Sarimba. Good morning, Chris. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Paul. I'm extremely well, actually. It's lovely to be invited on your show. Thank you so much.
Well, there we go. So, Chris, like myself and like everyone else I seem to be presenting this show with, is a personal trainer. There's a lot of personal trainers out there now, isn't there? It's a busy market.
It is a busy market, and I think most personal trainers have to find a way to differentiate themselves from the masses. There's got to be a way that you have a unique feature about you as a personal trainer. Now, for you, I think it's kind of the martial arts type aspects of what you do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, we just had a quick discussion. Like I said, I stay in my lane with fitness, yeah. And I think it's really important that you.
Yeah, exactly. I stay in my lane as well. I don't do martial arts. As soon as I kick anything anywhere above my waist height, I'll fall over backwards and injure my back.
Well, so do I nowadays, frankly.
So my particular speciality is working with people who are over 50 in my age group. It's what I call the better half century of life. You learn stuff in the first 50 years, but then from 50 onwards, you actually employ what you've learned. You use what you've learned to make your life better. Because when you're 50 onwards, you can slow down a bit. You can start enjoying life. You know, maybe the kids are beginning to think about leaving home if you've got kids. Maybe you're beginning to half think about retiring and start enjoying your life and not having to fight to make the money to pay the mortgage or the rent or what have you. So it becomes the better half century of life. And one of the best things about the better half century of life is you can enjoy it a great deal if you're fit and doing it. If you're perhaps overweight, if you're underfit, then you're not set up well to enjoy that second half century of life. Mm. But if you manage to do some work so that you are at the age of 50 or as you started a program at that stage to make yourself fit, or fitter than you were, and perhaps lose a few pounds of excess body fat as well, then that's going to set you up to have a fantastic 50s, 60s, 70s, and perhaps beyond as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've had a range of, I don't want to say older clients, but clients who are no longer in their 20s, I should probably say. And what I normally say to those guys, it's all about mobilisation, it's about movement, it's about just keeping that body moving, but also learning how to be strong in different positions. Because as you said, it's quality of everyday life. It's no longer about trying to win a world championship so much, although you can have that goal if you wish to. But it's really about how does my life become not so difficult, getting up off the sofa, going up another stairs, going out for a walk, yeah. Getting up, sitting down, maybe going for enjoying being active as you get a bit older as well.
Yeah, natural life doesn't actually help really, because unless you do something to really assist your mobility, assist your coordination, balance, and your strength, and your fat loss as well, then the human body naturally does deteriorate with age. It starts from around about the age of 35 onwards, and accelerates, you know, 50 and beyond. It's a condition called sarcopenia, which is the gradual loss of muscle mass as we get older. Now, you can actually fight that, but fighting is a horrible word. It's a word you use a lot in your business, but it's a horrible word for the average sort of 50 plus year olds. You don't fight sarcopenia. You have a look at it and you just say, how can I work around this sarcopenia? How can I get it to work a bit less in its the way it wants to work and start making my own life a lot fitter as well? So I focus on people getting a strength. I help them lose body fat. I help them improve their balance, their coordination, their mobility, their flexibility. All these things are things you need when you get old. Mm. And one of the things that people say to me is, I mean, I don't really need to get strong. I don't want to be a bodybuilder. I don't want to win fitness competitions like you have, Chris. I put in brackets. I don't need to be strong. It's not looking. I don't want to be a weight trainer or anything. And the answer is, well, the opposite of becoming stronger as you get older is becoming frailer. Mm. Becoming more frail is the default position. If you don't start thinking about doing some strength training, even if you've never been into a gym in your life, yeah. You wouldn't even know the difference between a dumbbell and a barbell. And I'm still working on that one. Yeah. If you don't know that, then that's not a problem at all. I mean, that's exactly the position of most of my 50-plus age group clients, because as you get older, the idea of becoming frail is really the default position. That's what sarcopenia will lead you to. Mm. And why do you need strength? Well, when you're a bit older, you know, you're hopefully going to go travelling somewhere, and you want to do things like, do things that require a little bit of strength. Like you want to put that case in the overhead locker on the plane, don't you?
Yep.
You probably should have checked it in, to be honest. It was a bit too heavy. But anyway.
Always the way. Save some money.
Yeah, absolutely. So you want to put that locker in, case in the overhead locker. Well, it actually requires strength to put it up there. You need to have chest and tricep muscles to put it in.
Yep.
and you need back and bicep muscles to pull it out afterwards. So you need a bit of strength to do that. And you've got a heavy saucepan that's maybe on a high shelf in the kitchen. Again, you need some strength to work on that. My wife's gran, she had no upper body strength at all when she died. But when she was about 85, she fell over, and she was actually on the floor for 14 hours before somebody called around, because she didn't have the strength in her arms to push herself up. So you need a little bit of upper body strength in terms of triceps, in terms of chest, again, a bit of shoulder activity in there as well, to help push herself up, to keep herself mobile. Because even if you don't want to win bodybuilding contests, even if you don't want to do that, which I'm sure most people don't, you do want to be able to get around unaided. You don't really want to be first in the queue for that mobility scooter. You see people in mobility scooters going around, you know, often they're overweight as they go around the mobility scooters. You know, which begat which came first? Were they overweight first, or were they needing the scooter first? I don't know. But you'd want to try and delay that as long as you can. I can't guarantee you'll delay it forever. If you live to 120, you've probably been in a mobility scooter then, I suspect.
I'd be very happy to be in a scooter at that age, I think.
Exactly. So that's what I look for. I don't expect people to go ahead and win marathons. I expect them to be able to run 5K until quite late in life. I think most people should be able to run 5K into their 60s and beyond. I can do. I'm not sure I can do much more than that. I did 10K on Sunday, but 5K is my regular limit these days. And it would be good for people to be able to do that and enjoy that quality of life from that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm thinking of examples here. An easy example, someone's going to hate me for this, it's my mum and dad, who often listen to this show. I think my mum, who will probably text me, she normally does, I think she'd be horrified of going in, I'm going to speak for her, into a weight training gym, and look at the weight areas and look at these guys doing, you know, 20-year-olds doing deadlifts and cleans and presses and all this kind of stuff. And I think she would be really most likely thrown by that, if I'm honest. I'm sure she'd agree with me. But she's very active. She does loads of walking, and my mum and dad enjoy walking. But as you say, that is a plane of movement, but there's a lot more that could be done. And as you say, perhaps there is this kind of fear we've got to try and get around, that strength training is not bodybuilding. It's really not. And it's really about improving life for you longer term. And the sooner you start on that, really the better. But it doesn't mean you can't start at 50 or 60 either, does it?
Indeed, I started at 50. I've never been into a gym in my life until I was about 51 or 52. And now I go into one most days of the week. But the word you're looking for is gym intimidation. So your mum is now texted you, no doubt. Your mum is gym intimidated, which is one of the words that I've invented. Yes, it's an alien environment, and I have to say I have quite a lot to say about gyms in this country, and most of them I find are strange in the way they really, really focus on trying to bring in the younger client. There should be a chain of gyms that are designed to bring in people over 50. And let's talk about that for a second, because most gyms are focusing on the guys and the girls in the area of between about 18 and sort of 28, 29. Yeah. That's their real target market. And if you think about it, that's the group of people who've probably got the least money, the least disposable income.
Yeah.
They also actually have the least need to go to a gym. They have the least need to prevent the onset of frailty and so on. And yet every single gym chain aims at that particular subset, that particular demographic, or chronographic, to give it its correct term. So every gym aims at that group. So, I mean, I have an occasion thought of starting up a fitness over 50 chain of gyms, which would be targeted at the over 50s. You wouldn't have the same booming noise that you get sometimes in some gyms, somewhere the music's too loud. You'd have Coldplay, etc., playing. Yeah. You'd have a few pot plants around the place. You'd still have the mirrors, but you'd have some curtains at the windows as well. It wouldn't be quite so sort of post-industrial agro design. It would be a much softer approach.
Yeah, some slippers in the corner for you.
Yeah, absolutely, and a place where you can store your pipe and come back later. Maybe not that, but something that was a bit more appealing to the over 50s. I mean, just imagine you start up a chain of petrol stations and you made it clear that you're only targeting these petrol stations at people between 18 and 28 years old.
Yeah.
And then the next petrol station down the road was exactly the same. They only targeted the 18 to 20-year-olds.
Fascinating,
28-year-olds too. So, unfortunately, I can't single-handedly change the gym movement. I can't open up my chain of gyms. I have thought about it. I have thought about franchising the Fitness Over 50 name to have a chain of gyms, but that sounded like too much like hard work, and I am meant to be retired. So I did think about doing it. But gym intimidation is something that I often face in my clients, or my clients tell me about. And the key thing is, if you are going to go to a gym, which is great, and start lifting some weights, which is absolutely fantastic, you should obviously get some advice from somebody. But the key thing is, do not go in there to look at other people. Don't compare yourself with other people. Yeah. So if it's full of good-looking 20-year-old guys and girls in the gym grunting and making huge noises as they deliberately drop their weights in a deadlift just to see how much noise they can make. You smile, Riley. You've seen those gyms too.
I'm probably that person.
Those people aren't looking at you. They're not interested in what you're doing. So you don't have to be, try not to be gym intimidated and don't be interested in what they're doing. Weight training is actually an amazingly non-competitive sport. I mean, I often go to the gym with some friends of mine who are either my same age group as me or younger. And if they're younger, they're usually lifting weights that are like heavier than mine. Maybe I've got some friends who are sort of in their late 20s and 30s I sometimes go to the gym with. They're lifting twice as much weight as me. But on the basis that I'm lifting my own weights and they're lifting their own weights, we're just sharing the experience together. And I'm lifting mine while he's taking his break in between sets, and then vice versa. Then what he's lifting is no concern to me, and what I'm lifting is of no concern to me. We're doing the same exercise, sitting on the same bit of kit, and a little bit of chat, and we have a great, great time doing it. But it's a sport, but it's not competitive at that level. So when you go to a gym, do not compare yourself with other people. You're there for yourself. And if you've not been before, get the advice of a good personal trainer.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's ultimately hard to not compare. I mean, we all know you go to the bathroom and you compare every now and again as a man, don't you? we'll stop that thought there. But it's hard not to compare. But ultimately, it's hard not to... I understand the intimidation factor as my mother, who is texting me now. But it's I can understand walking in and seeing a group of people half your age looking like they know what they're doing when you're fearful of not knowing what you're doing. But that's where it comes to go with someone who does know what they're doing to guide you through it, isn't it? I mean, if you walked in with no plan, no idea, and you're just going to turn around the minute you see the dumbbell rack, I'm not going to say you need a personal trainer, but you definitely would be guided by someone who knows what they're doing is the way through.
Absolutely, get somebody who knows what they're doing. Or failing that, you can always use the information that's in my book.
Well, I was going to say, we will come on to that. So I thought we'd play one more track and then come to that. But obviously your book is, I have your book in front of me here. So this is Fat to Fit at 50. There's a lot of Fs in there for a live radio show. Well, there's too many Fs, frankly. I'm going to get it wrong. I need to be careful. Fat to Fit at 50, which is your new book, which is out and available now. I'm kind of looking through this. I'm excited to read all of it. We've skimmed through it this morning a little bit, haven't we? So, Chris, you've obviously had your own journey that you and I have spoken about every now and again, but you didn't even enter a gym until you were 51.
About 51, yeah. 51, I think, was when I first decided that I needed to go to a gym and to try and lose some weight.
And there was a specific reason behind that, of course.
Yeah, the reason was that I was terrible in terms of my fitness life up until the age of 50. I had a great time. I was going to the pub all the time. The local fish and chip shops were doing great sales to me, and the burger bars. They're all earning an absolute fortune out of me in terms of the stuff I was doing. But I didn't do anything about fitness until I was over 50. And I think it probably goes back to my really, really early days, because... I'm an only child, or was an only child, so I didn't have to be competitive to fight over toys in our house. I mean, we didn't have many toys. We weren't a rich family at all. But what we had was all mine, so I didn't have to be competitive for it. And I didn't really have to get into any kind of competitive thing until I started getting into sport at school. And I was just rubbish at it, basically. I was totally rubbish at sport, and I still am, by the way. There's some anecdotes in the book about the fact that how rubbish my life in sport was, and I never really coped with the mental pressure of being in a team. The peer pressure of team and letting the team down is something that I've found difficult to manage my entire life, and especially as at school and in teenage years, such that the only sport I've ever played that I haven't been absolutely totally rubbish at is squash. And squash, of course, is not a team sport. So I've never played team sport yet. At one stage, I remember a school day when I was we were playing rugby, and as they used to do in those days, back in the late 1960s and early 70s, when you played against other people in the school, there were two team captains who were usually the best people in your year for playing the sport, and they would then pick alternately from the rest of the pool of pupils to who was going to be on their particular team. And I was always the last to be picked, of course, because I was so rubbish. And I do remember one particular day where one of the there was an odd number of players, and so as I was kind of strolling over to the team that I was going to by default be, because nobody was going to pick me, the captain shouted at the games master, said, sir, can I have Zaremba? We had him last week. Just great for self-esteem when you're 13 years old.
Terrible.
I've always been rubbish at sport, however, when I got to about 17 or 18, discovered pubs and drinking, 18, and discovered drinking, life sort of got much important to me, because by that stage I'd left school, hadn't gone to university then, it was a few years before going to university. A lot of mates of mine, also not that keen on doing sporty type things, went to pubs, and my weight absolutely bloomed until that carried on for my 20s and my 30s and my 40s until I hit the age of 50 at just over 18 stone, which is about 115 kilos, which is in no state to face the better second half century of your life.
Yeah.
So I went to the doctor to talk about something else. It was something trivial. I don't know what it was, actually, sort of athlete's foot maybe, or earwax, or something trivial. Doctor said, Chris, you've been putting weight on. I can see that you're. I'm stunned to see how heavy you look now compared to how last time I saw you. I'm going to send you some blood tests, and I want you to. And he measured me as well. Blood test came back. I was pre-diabetic. My cholesterol was through the roof. He did my heart rate. He did my blood pressure. That was rubbish as well. And the doctor said, Chris, you've got to lose some weight. You've got to get fitter, because if you do not, I don't think I'll be seeing you in a few years' time.
Wow.
So he said, you're here now. You're at 50. Unless you change your ways, you'll not be here at 60.
Wow.
So he didn't actually say the phrase diet or die, but that's
kind of what he implied.
That's what he implied, yeah. And I decided to take the four-letter word of those of those two options. And the doctor said, you know, he could give me, I don't say he, it's actually she could give me a whole range of tablets and tools to help me from the drugs cabinet that she had access to. But she said, I'd much rather you did this yourself, because you're not diabetic yet. So your blood pressure is high, but it's not dangerously high. Your cholesterol level, again, is high, of lousy cholesterol. The LDL cholesterol is high, but again, it's not dangerously high. You can control all these things without drugs if you set your mind to it.
Yeah,
and I remember that conversation very well. I mean, it was now, 15 years ago, because I was 50 at the time. And I thought, right, I can actually do this. So I've decided to apply myself in the way I've never done before to getting fit. And the story carries on in the book, really, as to what I did. And early on, I went into the gym, which absolutely terrified me. I was gym-timidated, going back to the word from before. Everybody in the gym was working out, and they were already looked far fitter than I did. So this isn't the place for me. I need to do something else. But eventually, I found, with the guidance of somebody in the gym, the cardio room, and specifically the cross trainer. And I could see that guys working out in the cross trainer, there were some of them actually even looked a bit like me. I mean, they're quite my age, at 50 or 50 plus. But they were overweight, and they didn't look. They actually looked like they needed the gym, and like most people I've seen in the gym, it didn't look like they needed it at all. I decided, and I also had the cross trainer as well, TV screens in front, so you could watch TV at the same time as doing some exercise, and that kind of appealed to me as well. And basically, I made friends with the cross trainer and went and did about 40 minutes. Eventually, built up to 40 minutes every morning before work.
Yep.
Doing the cross trainer, and I still do that from that day to this. First thing in the morning, I either do 40 minutes on a cross trainer in the gym, or I go for a run or along the cycle. Usually a run or the cross trainer. And at the same time, I stopped eating the rubbish I was eating. I got myself a little notebook and started noting down what I ate. I mean, I know it's a lot more scientific than just eat better and move more, but that does cover like 95% of it. I mean, I was eating huge amounts. I mean, I was travelling, I was commuting up to London from near Epsom, where we lived at the time, and I worked out that on a typical day I would eat probably somewhere between 4 and 6 Mars bar equivalents. So it wouldn't really be Mars bars. Could be a Topic or a Kit Kat or something like that. But I would, every time I went past news agents, I'd stop in and say, "Oh yeah, I think I'll grab a. What do I feel like? I feel like a mint aero today." So I was having between 4 and 6 of those, and eating a lot at lunchtime and in the evenings, or because fish and chip shop was on the way home afterwards, on the way home from the local station back to my place. So it was all things stuff that I knew I needed to change. It wasn't easy, but I had that doctor's warning ringing in my ears, the fact that that I would unlikely to see the 60th year. I'd also recently got married as well, and my wife was a sports mad fanatic. She loves sports in the way that I never did, but she really wanted me to be around for her later years as well.
Yep.
So that was a further reason to do it. So. Having done that and having got a lot fitter, then I eventually did become a kind of a gym junkie, basically. And between the age of about 56 and 60, I used to actually enter fitness competitions. And in fact, I am the current world holder of the world championship for fitness models for the over 50s.
Amazing.
I'm only the current holder because I haven't run the competition for the past few years, but I am actually the world champion fitness model and the world champion muscle model for the over 50s.
Amazing.
So yes, so I don't expect many people to do that kind of thing as well. Certainly don't expect my personal training clients. Then I got around to retiring from my full time job. I stopped commuting up to London. And by that stage, I'd also discovered the weights room in the gym. I'd spoken to a very good personal trainer, a guy who lives in America now called Rob Riches. He's very famous in the PT world. And he told me that all this cross trainer was great, and it was fantastic for me losing weight. But he noticed that what I was doing was losing weight. I wasn't losing body fat.
Yep.
He noticed that if you do, as you well know, if you restrict the amount of food you eat and you do more exercise, then unless you do something more specific than that, you're likely to lose weight, and that weight's going to be losing muscle as well as losing fat.
Absolutely.
Losing body fat is what we want. You don't actually want to lose muscle as well. As we said before, as we get older, the natural process of sarcopenia gets rid of the muscle for you, so you actually need to fight that bit. So what you need to do is, as you get older, when you're doing the work and the work in the gym and the food you choose to eat in order to lose weight, you need to focus on adding the muscle back that you lose. Because as you lose weight, you can't actually say, "I only want to lose body fat." You can't tell the body, "Just fat, please. Leave the muscle where it is. I'm quite happy with that. Just fat."
Nope.
You can't do that. You kind of have to add the muscle back. And you add the muscle back by eating not just less food, but eating more sensibly, eating better quality foods with a bit more higher percentage of protein in your diet, higher percentage of fiber and green veg in your diet, and so on. All the good stuff. You don't get to be over 50 without knowing what good stuff is to eat and what rubbish stuff is to eat. As well as that, you need to do some weight training. So this is where the weight training comes in the gym. And it took me about 3 or maybe 4 years of being in the gym, losing all that weight, for me to suddenly realise that I'd become weak and frail. So, and weak and frail is not really what I wanted to be at sort of in my early 50s. So listening to the words that I got from Rob, he showed me how to put weights and putting a weight training plan together that would help me add back the muscle that I'd lost during this big weight loss phase.
Yeah, well, I was going to say I've only known you as Fit Chris, of course, and then we've had a quick flick through the book, and then there's the pictures in there of
your Fat Chris as well.
Well, I hope I don't like using such a word all the time,
but of
previous Chris,
right.
I'm genuinely obviously amazed. It's a huge transformation. And your story, the first half of your story of hearing this health issue, is obviously not a unique story. There's a lot of people out there with the situation. But I think the difference with you came around when you said to yourself, "I can do this." That's what it was. It was a switch that says, "I can do this." And you started writing it down, which is accountability, which is you writing your food down, which, as you say, is really easy to just add up what you're eating without even realizing you're adding it up. So any form of accountability is great. So you've done all these right things. You've mentally attacked it, saying, "I can do this." You've put an accountability system in place so you can see how much is effectively going in. And then you've done the right thing, of course, which is finding someone who knows what they're talking about to help you build that muscle and build that. So you've kind of, ultimately, you've done everything right, but it's very easy to not get everything right and kind of try your best at this sort of stuff and fall off the wagon and fail and go around the loop, isn't it, as well?
No, there are so many traps. I mean, people often fall off the wagon because they get one meal wrong, if you like, early on in the process, and I'm giving up on this, isn't working. I've just had a big meal out with some friends, and it's been a rubbish day, and it's going to be a rubbish day tomorrow as well, and they just give up. So don't give up. The body, if you've started on a good track, the body's remarkably forgiving. Mm. You can actually survive having several kind of suboptimal, to use a correct term, days for that. And the other thing is, you've got to have reasonable expectations. The body hasn't put all that fat on in 1 week or one yep. month or 3 months. It's not going to come off in 1 week or no. 1 month or Agreed. 3 months. So I often say to my personal training clients, because now I've taken my fitness fanaticism, if you like, into my profession now, my post-retirement profession of being a personal trainer. And I often say to my clients, I lost 6 stone in 2 years, so it came down from 115 kilos to around about 70, 75 kilos. Mm. So if you'd like to do that, you might think that's an impossible objective. But if you think about the maths of that, it's actually 1 pound a week.
Yeah.
So I said to them, can you lose a pound of weight a week? And I say, yeah, I could lose a pound a week, but I need to lose stones. I said, well, yeah. A pound a week is a stone in 14 weeks.
How do you eat an elephant? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll start from one end and finish at the other end. Well, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So most people don't realise that if it's a pound a week is all you need to do. But keep it going. And you don't have to be good every single meal. You don't have to be good every single day in terms of the movement and the exercise. But, you know, the more you are, and I'm not going to put a figure on, I'm not going to say 80-20. I'm just going to say the more successful you are eating better and moving a bit more and doing some weight training as well,
yep.
the more you are successful at doing that, then the more likely you are to achieve your goals in a realistic time frame. But if you do a pound a week, then you're away.
Well, it's also to understand the progress is not measured on a graph that is in a perfect line of progress from start to finish. It's a wavy thing, isn't it? Achieve a little bit, you might fall back a little bit, you're going to achieve a little bit, you're going to fall back a little bit. It's not to set the expectation that every single day, week and month you're going to be hitting every single goal perfectly, unless your life allows you to really do that. But most people are going to achieve progress over the course of a year or so in a wavy line, aren't they? And I think some people get upset or get frustrated when it doesn't quite go in the exact line they want, but it's ultimately if they understand that and can deal with that, then to measure that progress over a longer time as well.
And one of the advantages I think I have as a personal trainer, as you said earlier on, stay in your lane as a personal trainer. Mm. And my lane is working with the over 50s, but it's also working with those people who are now what I was then. In other words, over fat and under fit. If they've got too much body fat, which is sometimes a term that people get upset with, but in which case I tend to say your BMI is too high.
Yeah.
There's only two ways of correcting your BMI being too high. One is to lose weight, the other one is to add height. you're dangerously under height for your weight. So that's
we can stretch you out a bit, but there's only so much we can do.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I focus on those people who are now as I was then. In other words, too much body fat and too little body fit, if you like.
Fantastic.
And that means that when I'm teaching people or showing people in the gym what to do for their own personal training, I'm not teaching from a textbook, other than my own, if you like.
No.
I'm not teaching from something I've read somewhere else. I'm teaching from what I have done to me.
Perfect. And there's obviously two sides to this book, isn't it? And secondly, just to follow up on that, I totally agree. You've got a journey. You've been through this yourself. You've got first-hand experience. And essentially, you're passing that on, which is ultimately, surely more rewarding learning from someone like that than just learning from someone who went on a course to learn it as well. So there's two halves to this book. The first half is your own personal story with the pictures of previous Chris and current Chris. And the second half is all about your advice to others, isn't it? So there's two halves to this. How do they find this book? How do they get hold of it? And other than coming into Marlowe FM and getting a copy?
It's available on Amazon, amazon.com/co.uk. If you type in fat to fit at 50, with my name, Chris Zaremba. Chris and then Zaremba is Zaremba. It's also available in bookshops. No bookshop will actually have it in stock, but every bookshop should be able to order it for you. because it's done through Amazon and they print on demand. So there isn't actually a warehouse full of 1,000 of these books. It's only ever printed when somebody orders it, but Amazon prints it instantly when it's ordered, including a bookshop. So yeah, go to the bookshop and it's Fat to Fit at 50 by Chris Sarembo. Or you can look at my website. There's a lot of the information in the book is also on my website as well,
yep.
Which is fitnessover50.co.uk.
So I know you're on Instagram and Facebook and all kinds of stuff, aren't you? But if everyone just keeps on typing in Chris Zaremba, unfortunately you had someone gave you this surname, didn't they? And it's not so easy to remember, but it's but Zaremba.
It's easy to remember, Christopher Zaremba.
Zaremba. So if they type that into Instagram or Facebook or something like that, yep. They're going to find you.
Or Google, yeah. A friend of mine typed in Chris Zaremba into Google and the first 1,000 things that came up were all me. Very, very embarrassingly.
There can't be that many of you, I'm sure. So go and find Chris. He's obviously got this book available if you can't get to see him personally. And the other option, of course, is to come and spend some time with you personally as well, if you're someone in Chris's previous position in life, I guess. And
I do personal training both locally, which is near Marlow, and in central London, and online. And of course, there's loads and loads of stuff in my book, and loads of stuff online on my website as well.
Fantastic. We've got a few quotes at the end here. It's Appendix Z, Zaremba's quotes. So I'm not sure you have a copy there as well, don't you? So,
I do, just in case. You're only going to ask me a particular thing on a particular page.
Well, I wasn't going to test you, but let's have some fun. So Zaremba's quotes, not Paul Busby's quotes. So if you're insulted, please don't complain to me nor Marlo FM. They can't be held accountable for Chris's thoughts. So number one, food is not a hug. That's one of my favourites.
It is, yeah, because the way life is today, there's such easy availability of food for everybody. In the way that there wasn't probably 50 years ago, and certainly 100 years ago, you know, 100 years ago people didn't have cupboards full of chocolate biscuits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
50 years ago, probably rather less so. But food is easily available now, and the food that people turn to is usually the less healthful type of food.
Yep.
One of the main reasons that I think the country is facing an obesity crisis is because people eat when they're depressed. A boredom eating or depression eating is not what food's about. Food is about keeping you alive. Food is about enjoyment. If you're having a meal with your friends, if you're going out together, yes, have a great meal when you're going out. But food is not about trying to cheer you up.
Well,
because food is a bit like alcohol, it's a bit like drugs, it's a bit like smoking, and it's a bit like gambling. Mm. You get a short-term hit from it.
And it's easy, isn't it? The comfort food is so easy to just unwrap a wrapper and shove it in the mouth. Whereas good food tends to take a tiny bit more thought, doesn't it? That's the part of the problem.
Yeah, not much more thought. I mean, it doesn't take much more thought to eat a bit of lettuce compared to a chocolate digestive. But no. Strange enough, we don't go to it. But you don't get the same dopamine hit. You don't get the same. The pleasure centres of the brain do not get activated by a lettuce leaf, but they do by a milk chocolate digestive.
So there you go. If anyone comes up with a chocolate digestive lettuce leaf, they've made it the world, haven't they? So one or two more. I work out so I can go out. I like that. That's kind of what we previously talked about with movement, and really, isn't it?
Working. Yeah, absolutely, because it's very important not to become a fitness-obsessed bore. So, in other words, I'd never turn down an invitation to go out to dinner or out to go out to the pub with some friends because of my fitness. I would never do that. I probably did, actually, in a month or two prior to my fitness competitions, when I wanted to be absolutely as fit as I could be, then I probably would have done that. But I don't do it now, and I wouldn't recommend it to anybody else. But no, don't become a fitness bore over it, and live life to the full.
Absolutely. And let's pick one more. If there's something you really want to do, you'll find a way of doing it. But if there's something you really don't want to do, you'll find an excuse, won't you?
Yeah, I you smiled wryly at that one, because I think about mainly about holidays. I mean, when I go on holiday, I really want to keep my fitness levels up a little bit. So I will, if there's no gym at the hotel or wherever we're staying at, then I'll go for a run, or I'll do a few press ups or a few sit ups in the hotel or bedroom. I'll do something, some exercise, because something is better than nothing. And as that quote says, if there's something you really want to do, you'll do it. So if fitness has become a habit for you, and if doing useful, healthy stuff for your body is good for you, you'll find a way of doing that wherever you are, whatever you are. If I'm going on a business trip up north in the olden days, then I would stop and go to a gym in London on my way there, for example. So I'll find a way of doing it. I'll pack my gym kit and find a gym on the way. And if there's something you really don't want to do, you find an excuse. Oh no, I'm going on holiday. I can't do any exercise. So I can't go for a run. So I'm going on holiday.
Yeah.
So That's a test. If you really want to do it, you'll find a way of doing it, whatever the circumstance. But if you really don't want to do it, you'll find an excuse.
Absolutely. Chris, that's fat to fit at 50, which is all the Fs, which I managed to do, despite my hoarse voice this morning. So available from bookshelves, from Amazon, and they can find you, they can train with you online. There's not an excuse, frankly. So, Chris Sarembha, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story and, of course, your book as well.
Paul, thank you so much for inviting me onto your show.
You're listening to Good Morning Marlowe on Marlowe FM 97.5.